scientists can get a little freaky when the lab coats come off and the real hard work of gathering empirical evidence regarding sex and sexuality begins. Who knew science could get people so horny?
Today, Brian Sweeney joins us to take a look at some of the most memorable, wildest, and hilarious scientific studies that we've reported on the show. Listen as we take a look at why guys care about their teammates' dong size, the average size of men all over the world, and which country has the biggest dongs at the World Cup.
Plus, the most effective way to keep coffee from spilling when you're running.
How to use your dog's pooping habit as a compass.
And why do stock photos of scientists show them blankly staring at colored liquids in beakers? I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Feast of Fun is made possible because of the support of fierce, fabulous people like you. Become a member and listen to 14 years of amazing podcasts at feastoffun.com/plus. Or put a tip in our tip jar and make a one-time donation at feastoffun.com/donate. Thank you for your support. Are you familiar with Thomas Dolby's song, She Blighted Me with Science?
Of course. I'm the MTV generation, honey.
I can't find that video anymore, anywhere, on the internet.
No?
I've been looking for it, and I can't find it. I'm so sad about it.
The original video, because there's different videos out there, right?
Where he has a sexy female scientist seducing him with the power of her mind. And he's so seduced by science that he loses his mind and needs to seek a psychiatrist who's also a scientist of the mind.
Well, I think science is very, very sexy myself.
You do?
Absolutely, without a doubt.
How so?
Well, you know, I'm a as Shirley Phelps likes to say, I'm a concrete thinker.
I wouldn't be quoting Shirley Phelps of that.
I know, but I just love that she says that. You know, I like things that are based in fact. You know, I like fantasy. I like magic. I like all fantasy and that kind of stuff. But the stuff that really makes this world tick is the stuff that gets me off.
I think that as Westerners, we really have a hard time balancing myth and reality. And when we discard our ability to imagine things, to believe in myth, we're robbing ourselves of a very rich, powerful tradition to make our minds and our lives feel better than they actually are.
Well, it taps into your creativity, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Like the myth making.
Absolutely. You know, and at the same time, you know, in this day and age with Trump in the White House, 2018, people have a really hard time understanding what science is. So when you say science to somebody, they think, you know, you Google the word scientist and you go to like an image search and you see very attractive people in lab coats staring very intensely at what they call the a very dangerous blue liquid, BVDL, in a test tube.
Sure.
And they're pouring it from one test tube to another, and they're like looking at dry ice, and
you're getting me hard already.
Yeah. And science is not textbooks. Maybe people just had like a bad experience in high school.
What's the scientific method is what you're talking about.
Research. What is that, though? It means the approach to trying to understand things by simply asking questions and changing the variables of what we've observed to see what happens next.
And typically, you sometimes have an idea of what the outcome is going to be. So you
have a good guess.
It's called a hypothesis.
Yeah. And but it's not facts.
It is not fact. And that's why you do the research to back up the facts.
Now, what is a theory versus a hypothesis?
Aren't they the same thing?
No. That's why we use different words for them.
Oh. Well, what is the difference?
Well, a hypothesis is a good guess. So it's like, you know, it smells great in the kitchen. Mark must be cooking something delicious.
Yeah.
That's called a hypothesis.
Okay.
I don't know if Mark's cooking or not. Theory, I still haven't gotten into the kitchen. It's like, well, on Mondays, Mark makes lasagna. Every Monday, Mark makes lasagna. Today is Monday. and I smell something good coming from the kitchen, so Mark must be cooking something delicious. And then I walk into the kitchen, and I see you washing dishes, and what I thought was delicious was actually the dirty dishwater. Mm-hmm. And that's how my teacher explained that to me in high school, that a theory is still a guess. It's just based on facts that we've observed eventually. And sometimes we can never know for sure what, for example, the theory of evolution.
Sure.
It's a theory because we're still not been around long enough to observe it, to fully understand why it's happening.
But we know it's happening.
We know evolution is happening. We just don't understand how it happens. Mm-hmm. And so science is a lot of saying things are like this because we have the evidence to back it up. We have the receipts. We have the timestamps. It's not about feelings. Mm-hmm. It's about knowledge. And knowledge is power. And power is sexy.
Mm.
Did you know 25% of Americans still think the sun revolves around the earth?
No way.
30% of Americans don't think it's important to vaccinate their children against deadly diseases.
30%.
30% of Americans in 2018.
It's because most people have grown up without any of these diseases, so they don't see the drastic consequences of not vaccinating their children.
Thanks a lot, Jenny McCarthy.
Wow.
No wonder Jim... What was his name?
Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey broke up with her.
He vaccinated himself against her with divorce papers. When I was in Norway, I got a vaccine boost because, you know, as you guys all know, I got bit by a dog like 2 days before I left. I'm just like, do I need a tetanus shot first, doctor? No. Then I saw another doctor in Newark before I flew out. And I'm like, do I need a tetanus shot? They said I didn't, but I'm pretty sure I heard if you get a dog bite, you need a tetanus shot. He's just like, no, we don't do those here in the States for that. I'm like, okay. And then I go to Norway because I need my 2 week checkup on my dog bite because I have this, you know, 3-inch open wound on my leg.
They couldn't sew it up because dog bites and get infected.
Yeah, they have bacteria and they don't want to seal that in. And so then, then the doctor in Norway is like, you didn't get a tetanus shot? I'm like, no, they wouldn't. Neither doctor would give it to me. She's just like, that's crazy. Here in Norway, we do that. So they gave me a tetanus shot. It was a booster for diphtheria, whooping cough, polio. Also, I'm ready to go. Bring it on.
Yeah. Yeah. And you won
the hearts and minds of Norway. I got close.
You got damn close.
I got real close.
What did science help you with the show? The idea of like, let's be objective. Mm-hmm. Let's not jump to conclusions. Let's base our guesses on knowledge as opposed to hunches and feelings.
Well, you know, during the show, I did say at one point in time, because I was reading a letter from my ancestors, and they said that she got mediocre grades. And I said, I didn't get very good grades either. I got A's and B's, and I did get some C's and, you know, a D here and there. And I did okay. But one thing I do know how to do is I do know how to take a multiple choice test, because it's almost never A.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's usually B or C.
And we're talking about statistics, right?
Statistics.
So if you're able to eliminate in a four-choice answer, if you're able to eliminate one of the choices, your odds of guessing correctly go up by
like 100%,
50%. One out of four is 25%.
25%, yes. Yeah. So you eliminate one, then you go up.
Yeah.
And there was one question, they had this puzzle board, and one of the questions was, somebody had answered, like it was A, B, or C. They had answered B, and I'm like, well, it's not going to be, and they got it wrong. So I'm like, it has to be C. So it was C, and I was right. So
ding, ding, ding.
So I got to go again.
Oh, that's good.
And then on that question, I got the answer.
And what was the answer?
Nordlands.
Okay. So one of the most entertaining and wonderful things about doing this podcast for us in the decade that we've done it.
Decade and a half.
Is looking at some of these outrageous scientific studies. Mm-hmm. And one of the most famous moments for us in the podcast, when we announced to the world that just in time for Christmas, the folks at the New England Journal of Medicine released a study saying that taking the medication Truvada on a daily basis significantly reduced HIV infections in gay men. For people who infrequently took the daily pill, new HIV infections were reduced by 44%. But for those who took it, it was at the time of the study was released, was 90% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Subsequent studies have said that daily regimen of Truvada's medication has up to 99% effectiveness in preventing HIV infections in people.
And that news came out 8 years ago this time of year, just in time for Christmas. It was amazing. And still people were like faced with this and they were like, they couldn't believe it. They couldn't believe that you could take a pill that people who are HIV positive were already taking, and that would prevent you almost 99.9% of the time from getting HIV.
And as a consequence of 8 years of PrEP accessible to some of the population, we've seen a significant drop in new HIV infections. Within some communities, it's at a standstill or at a reducing numbers. And so it's the first time in the history of AIDS and HIV that we're starting to see the new HIV infections starting to disappear altogether.
Well, what's also wonderful about that, too, is like it's not only are we seeing those disappear, but we're also seeing a reduction in stigma for people who have HIV. Because for years, you know, people that were negative were like, I'm not going to have sex with somebody who's HIV positive because I don't want to get AIDS. You know, and on the surface, that makes a lot of sense, but there are ways you can protect yourself. And now we're understanding that under treatment, that if you are in treatment, even if you have HIV, you're not going to be able to transmit that disease. And so I think that as a community, we're much more healthier now because we don't have that specter looming over us. Now, granted, there is still a lot of challenges people face who have HIV, and there is still some stigma, but I think that it's greatly reduced. And I just feel like, you know, a burden and a pressure has been lifted off of all of us.
And we were able to report on this because we have always been interested in somewhat the outrageousness of scientific studies who look at sexuality and the human body.
Right.
Because the human body and human sexuality is part of the universe around us, and our desire to understand it is inevitably going to lead to some hilarious studies where the scientists seem to go a little too far with their rulers getting into men's pants and looking at their dicks.
Well, you know what? It's a very important part of the body, and it's something that I personally like to study up close and personal.
You're like, well, I need to see your dick for science.
For scientific reasons.
Yes, sir. One of our favorite studies of all time in doing this podcast has to be the scientific study that the author himself called a cacocracy, which is rule by the perception of a large penis. And so this was a study that was done that looked, regardless of whether a guy was straight, gay, or bicurious, it looked at whether the apparent size of your teammate's or buddy's penis was good at boosting group morale. And on that show, Brian Sweeney was a guest.
He sure was.
Let's call Brian and see what he has to say about this study.
Let's talk to Brian about cocks.
Hello?
Hey, Brian, we were thinking about dicks, and so we had to call you.
Yes.
Oh.
How you doing?
Good. I was just thinking about pussies.
You were? What were you thinking about pussies?
About how dicks are great when they look when they're inside of them, but then when they're not, I don't like them at all.
No?
I only like dicks.
Do you like just like the tip of it in there, or do you want to see it like all the way shoved in there when you look at your porn?
When I look at my porn, I like to see a dick slapping against a vagina, against the big, fat, meaty labias, and then I like to see a couple, three or four guys just sort of pounding away into the same vagina, and I like it to be a very, very small woman.
Okay, so three giant men with giant dicks and a very petite little woman.
Yes, hopefully a Honduran man is also in there. I'm very specific.
Brian, do you remember the podcast we did that was called Cockocracy that examined podiatrist scientist Christopher Morris Roberts' study looking at queer masculinity and sports?
Yes, I remember it. It's all I think about.
Do you remember what the implications of the study were?
Yeah, but everyone's gay.
Well, not
typical
not
really. Feast was, of fun.
Men do check out each other's dicks in the showers.
Regardless if you're into dicks or not sexually, men look at each other's penises when they're in the locker room, because the conception of a man's penis with your community or your teammate was important to boost morale.
You had to measure yourself up against the other people. And there was a lot of people like that were kind of worried about getting naked in front of other men because they were worried about how they were going to size up.
And it was also that gay men have bigger penises, which you always seem to be able to fit into the episode.
Well, I'm glad that you remember that, because yes. I wasn't going to bring it up.
By half an inch.
Yeah, but I believe that sexuality is a spectrum, and there's no such thing as straight or gay, so... But I'm more advanced than you two.
Yeah, maybe.
Is that Brian kind of coming out as a...
As a rainbow child?
Yeah.
Sure. A
child of the spectrum.
Brian!
Whatever.
This is news to us.
I guess. I don't know. There's no such thing. That's what everyone says, except gay people. Everyone's like, well, actually, sexuality is a spectrum, except... when you're gay.
Well, does this mean that your gender identity is also non-binary?
Sure. Yeah, gender is also fluid. Everything's fluid.
Homer Simpson said in the I think it was the last episode of The Simpsons.
RuPaul ruins The Simpsons.
Oh, see, I was wondering why you would have watched a new Simpsons episode. Like, I liked that you were like, well, you know how Homer said on the newest episode of The Simpsons? And I was like, no one knows what Homer said on the newest episode, but... RuPaul was in it, so that's why.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't remember.
He says anyone can be everything.
Mom, yeah. As in, like, you better work, mom. So Homer Simpson dresses up in drag to save his marriage with Marge. And at the end of the episode, Homer's still in drag having a beer at Moe's Tavern. And Moe turns to Homer and says, are you a drag queen now? He says, I don't know, Moe. These days, everyone can be everything.
Well, I'm glad The Simpsons is finally doing an episode about Homer and Marge having trouble in their marriage.
Yeah, it's very
territory
right there.
I'm glad that RuPaul is now saying the exact opposite of what he's always said, because I guess the Animal Farm Orwellian Bravo network has broken him.
Well, RuPaul originally used to say, you're born naked, and the rest is drag, implying that all of us are in drag in some regard or another. Mm-hmm. And then when sort of pressured in an interview to say, well, does this mean that more than just cisgendered gay men or people who are pre-announcing their transition as trans or their announcement as trans qualify as contestants on your show, he said that Drag Race was not the right platform for them.
Yeah, drag because drag is only for men.
Well, no, and he's not saying that cisgendered women or trans women can't be drag queens. He's just saying that the Drag Race platform was not the right one.
Yeah.
And to some degree, I'm like, you know what? That means other shows can do that, you know? Or Drag Race will probably change as time changes. And we're starting to see them tipping their toes in that water. And so as we sort of become more conscious and aware of human sexuality and gender identity and all these other things, and as our own identities start being blurred in the very near future, we can argue that, you know, gender non-binary cisgendered women might be contestants on shows where cross-dressing is a main factor there, whether that's Drag Race or not.
They will definitely be serving fish and whatever.
We don't use that term anymore, Brian.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's tilapia. We don't.
No, it's derogatory.
Yeah, I know. I've been fucking saying that for the past. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, Brian. Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, yeah, salmon for dinner. I'm crushing salmon over here.
No, slamming salmon.
Slamming salmon.
Slamming the salmon.
Yeah. No. Yes. And the big. Crunch yeah. That char. Was.
Honey, you can't spell salmon without man. Fish. Okay.
She's serving fish. White fish.
You know, I think also it's. You know, we can say oceanic if you want us, because, you know, it's the sea, the saltiness, right?
Well, I think that the big problem is just that RuPaul is a product of I'm serious. RuPaul is like a product of Gen X, and in Gen X, like, sort of everything was about like making fun of things in general and having like an ironic tint to everything you say, including things that would be racist or sexist or homophobic, sure. But knowing like, but we're the cool ones who actually get along with everyone. And now, like, when you go back and look at a lot of the comedies that were like in the early 90s or mid 90s that were then like transgressive and so like open minded, it's like, Jesus Christ, this is not okay anymore.
Oh, really?
Like, this is,
do you think that's a Gen X sense of humor?
Yes, definitely. It is.
Because I'm a Gen Xer.
Yeah.
Would you say my humor is problematic?
Probably. I don't know. Like, I remember one time I fell asleep at your apartment and I woke up, you were blowing me. And then you were like, I'm just joking, mom. And I was like, oh, and then I came and I was like, just kidding. Oh, yeah.
Now, Brian is being very, there's no casting couch here at Feast of Fun.
No.
We have guests on because of their comedy, their talent. I have to say,
you know, that some of the audience, I would argue maybe like Paris, Peaches, Christ.
Yeah, they're hot for Brian.
They're in love with Brian.
Yes. Well, we Gen Xers.
Are you a Gen Xer too?
He is.
I am. We can put a flannel in our back pocket, and that's how people know that we're down to Gen X.
So we talked a lot about a lot of studies in the history of doing this podcast, and one of the ones that really got a lot of people talking a lot,
got their tongues wagging
and their mouths thirsty, was the average dick size. So this is researchers studied more than 15,000 penises to determine the average lengths around the world. But the researchers themselves said this was a problem because, one, not everybody in every country agrees on how to measure a penis.
Yeah.
So they go by the balls, they go by the top. That also, the people that were being looked at were either men in fertility clinics.
Mm-hmm. Fertility.
Fertility.
I think I ate there once. Fertility.
Or students, young students. That were studying
in med schools
that were volunteering for this. So you didn't have like a lot of the sample size was very limited in analyzing. Despite this, they said the average flaccid penis size was 3.6 inches long and erect was 5.1 inches long.
Well, it's like, how do you measure along the curve though? Do you follow it along? Because like some dicks are really curved. Do you do it like it's a straight line? I mean, how do you do that?
You have to ask the scientists about that.
I measure by perimeter. So I take all four sides and then add them all together.
I measure for my taint. It's 12 inches.
It's so big. Another interesting study is a different group of scientists went to the World Cup. This sounds outrageous to me.
The World Cup.
The World Cup, and they started measuring the dicks of all the athletes there. 32 nations took part in this study. Who do you think has the biggest dicks?
Nigeria.
No. Actually, Nigeria measured at 6.1 inches long. Mm. The largest dicks in the world.
Was it Coxylvania?
It was Colombia at a whopping 6.7 inches.
Well, all right. I looked up with a Nigerian guy, and I swear to God, it was like 11 inches. It was insane. I was just like, this is the longest thing ever.
So they're extraordinarily large. Iceland, Panama, Brazil, and Peru all had massive dongs. You want to know who? Where the United States is perfectly in the middle.
Oh yeah, well that's that's strange.
Guess who's at the end?
The melting pot.
Guess who's at the end of the line?
Who?
Just guess.
Oh,
who has the worst attitude and likes to rattle the sabers the most in the world?
Twinkle North Stan.
Korea. So North Korea. South Korea is the very end at a modest 4.6 inches.
Okay.
South Korea is nice. North Korea is mean.
Well, but, you know, it's culture. I don't know. Because I don't think North Korea participates in soccer. Yeah. So Russia is at 5.2 inches.
Oh, so this is just the sample size of who's playing in the World Cup.
Yes. Correct, correct.
So there might be like some like Latvian cock that's just like the, that doesn't even exist. That's Dr. Doom's country, but, but I couldn't.
Saudi Arabia, 5.4 inches, but also Portugal, Spain, and England also had very modest dongs. Well, and Germany didn't have as big dongs as a country as like porn. Belgium.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Maybe Germany had it, and then during the war, that was like one of like Hitler's things.
Yeah, get rid of the big dicks.
Yeah, he just put like a bunch of like yellow stars on a bunch of huge cocks, and they're like, "We're not Jewish," and they're like, "Yes, you are. Get in there." The Führer has the biggest Penisstein.
The stripper. Yeah, so these are soccer players, you know. Yeah. Soccer players, are they, you know, typical men of like, is that a good ratio to go from, or does running around on a field like that, you know, make your nuts bigger, smaller? What's, does the cup do something?
They're just looking at soccer players because somebody somewhere said, I'm going to write a grant that allows me to measure soccer players' penises.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this sounds just like a bunch of like horny gay dudes. Yeah. A bunch of horny gay dudes like bought fake mustaches and like slide rules, and they were like, "Hey, we're scientists. We need to look at dicks. Come over here."
I'm really impressed that they convinced all the sports teams of all these countries to participate in this study.
They probably gave them some money.
Yeah, but still, you know.
And then also too, you know, a lot of guys is like, they want people interested in their dick. They, you know, it's just like, hey, come over here. You know, can I take a look at your dick? And they're like, yeah, take a look at it.
I think Russia, especially Russia, had they known that they would be at the bottom of this list, they probably would not have participated in it. So this is a one-time study. So now you know why Vladimir Putin's kind of an asshole.
Well, that's why you can't. That's why, like, all these, if you'll notice, all the small dick countries have like limitations on going on the internet. And it probably came about right after the study came.
They're like, don't see the big dicks. You know? You don't want to see the big dicks from Czechoslovakia.
Their homepage is just their own like state studies that talks about how Russia takes up 64% of the world's dick growth. They go by percentages.
There's also a study out there that say, though, like, if your dick is too big,
then, yes, like, I know.
Your woman will cheat on you.
Yes, that's right. It's happening.
Because it'll ruin the, like, her instance. She's like, I want a dick that feels better than this big, long dick.
So it's kind of the opposite of the don't make a pretty woman your wife song. Mm.
Well, when you stretch out your wife so much that, like, every time she, like, bumps into a guy, he's basically having sex with her because her vagina is so huge now because of your huge, huge dong.
Mm-hmm.
Your giant, what? Well, who has the biggest dick?
Oh, in the country?
Colombians.
Yeah, Colombia. Yeah, like all of Colombia.
I know
all
some Colombian guys, you know.
Yeah, but their wives are all cheating on them because their vaginas are so big.
I wonder if the Colombian guys knew the study was happening and they, like, you know, got penile enhancement surgery.
They're saying, like, that's really one of those things you really want to shy away from if you can. There's usually more complications involved in getting penile enlargement surgery than the benefits. Because usually it's just kind of like, they can make your dick thicker.
Yeah.
But they can't really make it longer unless they cut the ligaments, and that's called, like, liberating it or something like that. So if you have a very small penis, it might be kind of worth the risk. But if you're just like, hey, I got 5 inches, I'd like to have 6 inches, it's probably not worth it.
But isn't it the thing of when you lose weight, it's like for every pound you lose, you gain some small amount or...
Yeah, there's the dick.
Or like your fupa. Every 20 pounds or something. Yeah. Well,
what do they call a fupa on a dude? Is it still called a fupa? The fat,
sure,
upper
fat
pussy?
Upper penis area.
Yeah. So that area, so if that shrinks, then your penis looks bigger. But also, too, like, if you look at these porn stars, it's like their dicks look really huge a lot of times because they're usually pretty fit. And so they have these very small waists, you know, small butts and everything like that. And so their dick looks really big against that. But if you're, you know, let's say you're a bear and you have a big dick, it might not look as big as a little tiny twink stick.
So this is a really hilarious study. And we've talked about this a lot, and we've actually interviewed scientists on the show that hooked up electrodes Well, they're not like, you know, to shock them, to kind of like the same, the general equivalent of a lie detector test.
So basically for men, it's you kind of wear this condom like device and it looks as it sees like how engorged your penis will get. And then they put like these monitors on women to see how wet your pussy looks. But then some of these studies, they have you like, so they're measuring that, but they're also having you like turn a dial, like how turned on you are. And sometimes like with these studies, it's kind of weird is that, you know, they're watching something, they're watching porn and they might be like, I'm really turned on, and so they turn the dial, but their pussy or their penis isn't the same.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
So they're not aroused, and also they're looking at, so one study was looking at what men and women were looking at when they were looking at pornography. And what was interesting is that the women tended to look at the women's bodies more than the men looked at men's bodies, regardless of their sexual orientation. Another study, so women tend to swing both ways more, are more comfortable with the idea of having sex with another woman than men generally speaking are.
Yeah.
But another hilarious study showed individuals not just sex with other people, but also sex with bonobo monkeys.
The only animal that, besides humans, that have sex for pleasure. Or dolphins also, right?
Yeah, well, dolphins
it's do oral it. Sex, too. What is it? Bats?
The fruit bats actually spend quite a bit of time giving each other blowjobs. They're the only few, one of the very few mammals in the animal kingdom that give oral sex, or oral sex is a major part of their sexuality.
Fruit bats?
Fruit bats, because they're fruity.
That'd be a good rebranding name for you guys.
The fruit bat? Yeah.
Yeah.
Fruit bat club.
That's kind of cool, the fruit bats.
There's your t-shirt.
Yes.
Don't steal it.
Hey! That's very good.
No, they're
going
to steal it. So they showed the bonobo porn, monkey porn to other people who thought, oh, man, I'm going to be watching porn. This would be great, you know?
This is what colleges, this is the money that they're getting from parents. This is where the grants go to. They're like, watch these monkeys giving head, and we're going to see how wet your pussies get.
But they didn't get wet. People didn't get turned on.
Well, actually, no. Oh. So the men really were just kind of like, what? No. But the women, that was a different answer. Mm. They were a little bit more turned on by the primate intercourse than men were, and probably were would have probably been just as aroused by seeing like other animals having sex. Mm. And then to me, I'm like, this is outrageous, and I don't think that it's a study that can be. You know, it says, oh, women are just into bestiality or whatever. I think that women's sexuality is more about the concept of intimacy, and men are definitely about seeing something physical. Mm-hmm. And when transgender people start going on hormonal replacement therapy, there's a lot of reports on how estrogen and testosterone affects their sexuality.
Like we've had like last week we had Huron who talked about being on testosterone replacement therapy, and they were saying, or Z were saying, that Z was very turned on by the testosterone and became more visually turned on.
Yes.
Huron? Their name is Huron?
Heraclitus,
for short. But what's also interesting about that study is that people who identified as having a high sex drive, you know, the men, whether they were gay or straight, they were all turned on. So like a hetero guy's watching porn, he's really turned on. But if it's hetero porn, not so much by the gay porn, and the inverse for gay men. But for women who reported to have a high sex drive, they were turned on by the gay porn and by the straight porn.
Yeah, this is also like one of the few times that men can have like moral superiority over women, like back pointing to this test.
What?
And being like, look how gross you are. Your pussies are all wet over these monkeys fucking. Like, we don't like that. How dare you? Women will have sex with anything. It's gross and disgusting. We should have a hashtag for this.
Well, the researchers of the first study that looked at where people are looking at on other people's bodies when they're looking at porn chillingly suggested that women's sexuality evolved to be more open as a consequence of living in a world that's violent and hostile towards women in general. And it was a survival mechanism to dealing with rape and rape culture.
I thought you meant like the literal what they were looking at, like they were looking at their feet or something. Well, I'm serious. That's what I thought you were like. What I they thought were you looking were like,
are they looking at the penis going to the vagina? What are they looking
yeah,
at?
Yeah, that's what I thought. Like, that's an interesting study of like what is it that you look at? Because I like seeing a woman's face in porn. Like, I like seeing like the faces she makes and stuff. And like when it's more of like the disembodied torso or just like pelvis or like the butt or the vagina getting it, I don't think I'm as into it.
You skip ahead a little bit.
Yeah, I like seeing their face. I like the personal. I like seeing their face getting covered and destroyed. No, but I like seeing like the sexual faces and stuff when they're just sort of taking it and it doesn't look like they're into it. That's like a bit of a turnoff, or that is a turnoff.
You want to see the oohs and the ahs and the ah.
I want to see the ooze all over the face.
The oozings.
Yeah, ooze all over it.
Do you usually make bad decisions when you're horny?
I think everyone does.
Right? It's like once you come, you're like able to see things clearer.
Yeah.
And you're just sort of disgusted with yourself. Like, as Gen X people, we know, like, remember, like, just, like, looking up at, like, the VCR with that disgusting tape of what you've just done, and you just, like, took out the tape, and it's just all gross, and you're just like, what am I doing with myself? You have to clean yourself off. You're just so wrong. It's weird that, like, come, it's out afterward, and you're just like, now I have to deal with this, like, and it's like, such a byproduct, or, like, It's just like the waste.
You know, this is what you say, Brian, is when you come inside your girlfriend or whoever it is, she'd be like, yeah, I didn't want that load anymore. It's yours now.
Oh, that's sweet.
Like, yeah, they're like, oh, that's so romantic. You gave me a gift.
Well, especially, yeah, with Christmas coming up.
You know? Well, so you, of course, you know, you're judging women for being wet when they see bonobo monkeys.
It's disgusting. Sometimes
having sex with each other. This is going to flip the tables in favor of women. So this is a study at looking at men and their general openness to sexuality when they're horny and they're sexually aroused. So the researchers gave the guys the ability to answer the questions with one hand while they're stroking
themselves.
What's happening?
So they're jacking themselves off. And the interface of the they're giving them images on the screen, and it's like a quiz, you know, like a really lame SAT test. Do you think this is horny? Why do you think it's horny? So they're able to answer the quiz while they're masturbating, and they're looking at this quiz on the screen, and the questions range from fairly tame about the attractiveness of a woman's shoes, or a pleasantly plump woman, or a sweaty woman, or a sweaty man, to more intense, like questions like being tied up. And then things got darker when participants were asked about their willingness to have sex with an underage girl or an animal. Subjects were also asked whether they would be willing to try to obtain sex by drugging a woman, getting her drunk, or lying about loving her.
Was the animal underage? Or is, because I don't want anything weird.
The results were exactly what you expected. Men were more willing to agree to morally questionable shit when their dicks was hard, as opposed to the answers they provided after they'd settled down and wiped the sweat off their brow.
Wow.
I see, that's fine, but I mean, I feel like this is a problem with both men and women. I know so many women that are dating or married to just absolute assholes. And they, like, just sort of they're, like, Trump-loving people and stuff like that. And they just pretend like nothing's happening. And they're just dicks. And they're married to them. And I feel like, I understand, like, if I was, like, dating, like, Ariana Grande or something, and she's like, you know, I don't think the Holocaust happened, and if it did, they deserve it. I'd be like, you know what? I can accept that, and I would just sort of pretend like it didn't happen. There's a lot of leeway that you give people based on how
it all depends on your political viewpoints on certain things. You can have a viewpoint on this, and if it just if it doesn't jibe with you know, something can be terrible, racist, misogynistic, but it's coming from somebody you love, you just kind of like you accept it more. Whereas if it's like somebody who's like, you know, a paragon of virtue and they do like one little tiny thing, it's like they're the devil.
It's also how attractive they are. Like if Chris Hemsworth started speaking, if he took his shirt off and then started speaking about how like whatever the like we should kill all the Jews or something, you would be like, well, I don't like that part of him, but for the most part, he seems okay. Like I feel like most people, not just gay people, gay men or straight women, would still kind of allow Chris Hemsworth with a shirt on to keep talking or allow themselves to like sort of be friends with them, because we have this weird just human quality that the more attractive you are, the more just like shit you can get away with.
Well, and for scientists, you know, when they're studying political values or values in general, or why somebody is a Republican or a Democrat, it's not always clear. For example, the Republican Party's platform, when Reagan and George H. Bush, the father, H.W. Bush, were both running for the ticket for the Republican Party. This is a video that's being shared around on the internet right now. George H.W. Bush was saying, and Reagan were saying, that we should open our borders to Mexican immigrants, specifically in Mexico. They said that Mexican people are part of our family and that we should reach out to them. And part of the Republican Party platform, which was not that long ago, before Bill Clinton and the Democrats' NAFTA, was really about expanding the ability of Mexican immigrant workers to work in the United States, which is very, obviously a very different approach than the Republicans and Donald Trump are taking today. So for scientists who are trying to understand why somebody identifies as a conservative or a liberal or Republican or Democrat, it's much more complicated than that. So one study, interestingly, trying to do is to figure out what it would take to have a conservative right-wing person be more liberal or more progressive. And so a lot of scientists actually say that we should stop using the terms liberal and conservative, but talk about terms of how regressive a person is. So there were three things that the scientists were doing, and I talk about this a lot on the show, is
the regressives.
The
ones that want to hold you back, because there's people posing as liberals who are, in fact, regressives.
People who are on, you know, on all political parties and persuasions and platforms all can be regressive. And there's three qualities to regressive people, and these are qualities we all have in ourselves to some degree. It's just when it takes over a person so much, they can flip from becoming a Democrat to a Republican or a liberal to a conservative person. And so the three things they were looking at was, one, how comfortable were they with seeing another person win something they already had? So they would do, like, you know, games, and the person would talk about satisfaction when they won a prize, you know, about some money or a reward. And when that individual knew that somebody else had taken the similar test
and won,
then the value of that prize was diminished. So it was this idea of selfishness that it was not enough to win something. It was also important for that individual to see someone else not win it, to not have it. The second thing was a fear. So the studies, they actually looked at 4-year-olds in a laboratory situation and found that the more fearful, the scarier, the more frightened the 4-year-old was about the dark or ghosts or anything in the world, the more likely they were to lean conservative in their political attitudes 20 years later. And then, so it was fear, selfishness. And the third thing they also looked at was the desire to boss other people around. So regardless of your political persuasion, if you are a person who feels very empowered going on social media and telling other people what the world should be like, you will tend to be more regressive than somebody who's just like, eh, you know, we all have different opinions. Let's discuss things. Let's let the world be where it is.
And the fourth one
was
well, they show bonobos and monkeys giving each other head.
So, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's something that I've started to see that I don't know if you observe this, but like we've observed this quite a bit in our community, especially as LGBT people. Like, it's really obvious to see like somebody who's supporting Trump. And, you know, like there was these guys in New York, this gay couple who famously flipped from being Hillary Clinton supporters to Trump supporters because Hillary Clinton wouldn't meet with them and take a selfie. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was all just like shithead access.
And that's what a shithead is somebody who likes to boss other people around, who doesn't and it feels angry when they see somebody else winning the same thing that they've won. And also is very fearful about anything that sometimes is just the fear is just fear itself. It's not based on reality.
But it's also there's levels, because sometimes if like you win an award or someone gives you a compliment, if you hear that same person give someone else the exact same compliment, it lessens it for you. So
Lady Gaga saying 99 people in a room and it takes one person to believe in you, and that's all it takes.
Over and over again, it becomes meaningful.
And it's, I guess it's been found out that Madonna said almost the same thing.
Well, she said
a decade ago,
you know, there could be 100 people in the room and 99 of them like you, but that one person doesn't like you. That's the one I remember. So she kind of flipped it.
In
but,
a very negative.
Brown University did a study that they looked at staunch conservatives and liberals, and they were people were attracted to the sense, to the natural sense of people who had their same political leanings. So you were attracted to a, like your body produces, if you're conservative, your body produces a certain type of body odor, and other conservatives can smell you.
Gross.
But of course, liberals, you know, they all smell like patchouli, so
yeah.
And conservatives smell like meat lovers pizza. Stale meat lovers.
Liberals
pizza.
All smell like medical marijuana cards, and conservatives smell like, I don't know, the opioid crisis or something.
Yeah. I don't. I guess the idea is like, and some TED talks have said this, that regressive people or conservative people will always be a part of humanity. That it's something we need to figure out how to get along with each other or how to value that type of mindset.
I guess, but first we need to have
democracy.
Yeah, it's first you need the actual power put in place, where then you can say, well, we have to just put up with these gigantic fucking assholes who want to ruin the world for us, as opposed to being like, hey, let's all make sure that we understand like why it's okay to not talk about global warming or something. Like, why? We should give them more, like, we should give them more New York Times op-ed pages.
The CDC recently said that only 12% of Americans eat the minimum amount of fruit recommended, and fruits and vegetables. A cup and a half to 2 cups a day. And only 9% get 2 to 3 cups of vegetables a day that are recommended.
Oh, wow. That's a lot. 2 to 3?
We don't eat 2 to 3 cups of vegetables a day.
Sometimes I do.
The CDC said just eating one banana, half an apple, one salad, or at least 1 cup of tomato soup would cover that. But most Americans can't even seem to fit in that much.
Most Americans probably... I don't know. It's also about access to places that sell fresh produce.
Yeah, it's definitely like much harder to get, you know, a salad if you live in a food desert where there are no supermarkets, and the only place you can buy something to eat is the gas station.
You know, and when I was a kid, we grew up on a lot of, I mean, we did have fresh vegetables. We had a garden. My parents would buy stuff, but it was often, you know, we relied on frozen vegetables or canned. We ate a lot of canned vegetables, canned corn, canned
Not
peas.
Not me. In Puerto Rico, it was all del país, the stuff that was grown locally. So we grew, like, we couldn't get that fancy mezcloon. That's a new thing.
Over the years, we've always reported on like facial hair and what that means for getting booty. Now, Brian, when we first met you, you were clean shaven.
Oh,
and then you started
growing
a beard, and then you got a girlfriend.
Yeah. mm-hmm. and just several girlfriends. Just one at is I was mm-hmm. pounding beef like you wouldn't believe.
Well, some people are like, is it, you know, what do you find is like attractiveness? Do you want to, you know, some people say a guy with a long beard is more of like a somebody who I feel like would be able to take care of me and my children. Some people say the sexiest of all is the 5 o'clock shadow. And they also have a new study, an Australian study, say that for women that are into men with facial hair, the key isn't whether it's long or short or it's the 5 o'clock shadow, is that if it's different from everybody else. So if you are like let's say you're attracted to somebody in your office, every dude has a beard, you're probably going to be attracted to the guy with no beard.
You know, it's interesting that you say that mm-hmm. because I actually intentionally grow my facial hair out mm-hmm. so I don't draw attention to myself.
Oh, really?
So I look like everybody else at work and kind of look a little bit like you. Mm-hmm. So if somebody's going to attack me, they're more likely to attack you than me physically.
Oh, not me.
They're like, I don't know which one it is, Mark or Fausto mm-hmm. or Brian, but I'm going to swing. And chances are, you know, it's 1 out of 3. They're going to avoid me.
Mm. Mm, that's a good, yes. That's good.
It's a good strategy.
Don't peacock.
Well, you know, how do you feel about casual sex, Brian? Does it make you feel good? Do you
get depressed? Wait, yeah. Before you move on, I want to know, what is the right beard? I mean, it's looking different from everybody else. Is the sexiest
That's
thing?
One of these studies.
Things. Uniqueness yeah. is yes, sexy.
There's a uniqueness.
It's the sexiest thing. Mm-hmm. So if you have like some weird mutton chops from like 18th century, you know, Bram Stoker's mm-hmm. Dracula look, you're going to get a lot more puss.
But not like in 2005 when that was in. You know?
Oh, so you got to get the Van Dyke that's not in right now.
Maybe.
Or yeah. The 1993 Van Dyke.
Yeah.
Did you ever have a goatee, Brian?
No.
I had a goatee when I was 18 years old. It was the first facial hair I grew. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I had to shave it off because crabs grew in it.
Oh,
that's not sexy.
I had a goatee, and then I went to Rome, and all the guys in Rome had like pencil thin goatees,
like John Waters,
but like the whole goatee kind of thing.
Oh, so it was like a circle around their mouth.
Yeah, basically,
like the Backstreet Boys guy.
So I tried growing that; it looked terrible.
Oh no!
I know, it's just terrible. You know, because a lot of people say like casual sex, it's, you know, it gets a bad rap. People aren't really, you know, you're not into it. It'll just leave you cold and depressed.
But it actually, will, but yeah, whatever.
But no, a new study from Cornell University and NYU say that some casual sex is a lot of fun, and it elevates your mood. It makes you feel better. And go ahead and just, you know, have sex with whoever you want for everyone.
Everything in moderation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was a study that Carl Sagan quoted in his book, his original book, Cosmos, that talked about a society's propensity towards violence. And I can't remember. There was two things that societies that were less violent shared in common. But one of them was that it allowed young people to fully express their sexuality, regardless of that was.
Billions and billions of young, beautiful bodies.
Having casual sex and orgasm.
Neil deGrasse Tyson is in the news again.
Yes.
Yeah.
How depressing.
It's so sad.
Oh, well.
Because he's, been sexually harassing his female colleagues.
Did you see who wrote that story about him?
No.
Who?
Pluto.
Who? The planet?
Yes, the dwarf. The dwarf planet. This is like its ultimate revenge.
Well, it's like,
Pluto had a byline. And they, so it just like said, revenge is a dish best served cold.
Well, you know, if you've ever been to Pluto, the whole planet's cold by our standards.
Oh. Some woman stood up in a crowded theater he was at and accused him of rape.
Oh, shit.
We were having so much fun. Why'd you have to bring it down, Fausto?
Maybe. Yeah, like one of the ladies said, like, he asked to see a tattoo, and then he was like, where's Pluto? And I was like, oh, okay, that's whatever. That doesn't sound mm-hmm. that bad. And then And then the other one is like, he said something to me once and it was gross. And I was like, all right, that's not that bad. And then the last one's like, he drugged me and raped me. And I was like, oh shit. Well, there's no real wiggle room on this one.
Yeah. So it seems like he's going the Bill Cosby route.
Oh no. Who will host my show, Cosmos?
And this is right. I guess they're having a second season of Cosmos with.
Yeah, and they've already like filmed it and everything. It's whatever. I mean,
his career is going to the dogs.
Yes. Speaking of Pluto.
Well, Pluto's not. Oh, the dog, the Disney dog. That's right.
Yes, Mickey's dog.
Scientists have always wanted to know about dogs pooping and peeing. And
yes, they have. It's been it's long been. Pooping? I remember. I believe it was Copernicus said, "Why a dog poopy?" I don't know how Copernicus Galileo so, like why are the dog make the poopy?
One of the studies was really interesting. Was looking at the pattern and the reason why it's so important for your dog to poop and pee. And
well, they have to get it out of them.
Besides the natural, you know, unlike other animals, dogs, the peeing and pooping process, it's really important for them to communicate with each other. So just like the internet where people shit all over social media or shit on you on Grindr or Scruff or Tinder, dogs use urine and feces to communicate their mating status or their territory or their opinions or thoughts on things. So literally, just like the internet's full of shit for some people, dogs, literally, the internet is shitting and peeing for dogs.
What do dogs tell each other through their urine and feces?
They say whether they're single, they're fertile. Whether they're horny.
Jesse's peeing, he's like, my nuts have been chopped off.
And just you know, it's knowing which dogs they get along with and the ones they don't. So when you're walking your dog around and you see the dogs come in contact with each other, once they recognize each other's scent, it's kind of like a calling card for the dog because they know where the dog lives, what the dog's been up to. And so they get a lot of information about the other dogs in their neighborhood but through urine and feces and through scent. What the study looked at is the size of the dog and where they place their urine. And they learned that little dogs lift their legs higher to try to make their scent more noticeable than taller dogs do. So taller dogs tend to pee downwards, whereas little dogs pee upwards.
I want people to think that, like, oh, they're not going to see me, so I want them to think that I'm a big dog.
It wasn't about the concept of size. It was the concept of being heard or seen. So all the dogs kind of
pay attention to me and my urine.
Pee towards the general same height.
That's some real peacocking.
Well, and if you think that's amazing, I mean, peeing and pooping for dogs is just as important, as vital as the internet is for us. They've done another study that looked at the way dogs pooped and where they were pointing along the polar axis. Right. So if the dog was aligned east, west, north, south, and whether there were disturbances in the Earth's magnetic field. And so the results of the study said they tended to poop. And I guess next time you're walking your dog, pull out your compass on your smartphone. They most generally will poop along the north-south axis.
Well, isn't everything going to be a north-south axis no matter where you are?
No. So, for example, east-west is perpendicular to north-south. So when your dog takes a shit or pees, next time, examine them on which direction amongst, you know, pull out your compass. Okay. And you'll see if you're lost, your dog will generally poop along the north-south axis. So if you know
but
which direction
matter,
north is.
Like, if you have any point on this globe, is gonna you're going to be able to plot it on the north and south
axis. Do you know how a compass works?
Yeah.
Okay, what does the compass do? It points to north.
To the north, yes.
So your dog's face is either going to point north or south.
Oh, so you're talking about the face. Okay.
Yes. Their body will align along the north-south axis. So the next time you see your dog pooping, your dog is like a compass. Will point.
So all right, Jesse, we've got science to do.
Are sensitive to the magnetic fields of the Earth, which I think is fantastic.
Well, do they have like metal in the front of their head like humans do?
They have something in their head that allows them to figure out where
they say humans have a little bit like a like between their eyes and stuff like that. That there's like a little bit of like we have metal and iron that sits there and it helps us guide to where we need to go. I can feel it. North's that way. What?
He's right.
This is a really cute study. I guess walking is a really bad way to keep coffee from spilling out of a cup.
Oh man, it's terrible.
So they gave people hot cups of coffee, mm-hmm. and they had them walk, and they'd use the same kind of slow motion or high speed cameras that they use on athletes to measure their movement, and they said that the biomechanics of walking were terrible for keeping the coffee inside the cup.
That's why when I get coffee and like I'll walk the dog, I'll get a coffee. If I was like, bring me back a coffee, I'm like, no, my hands are full. I have my own coffee. I have the dog. It's just going to go everywhere.
So the researchers actually figured out that in order to keep the coffee in the cup, three things you can do that will improve it. The most obvious one is to put the coffee in a tray and hold that tray with both hands. So it gets away the motion of your arm. Mm. The second is that your hand is more likely to throw the liquid out of the cup. If your coffee is strapped to your wrist, the cup is strapped to your wrist, it's less likely to come out of the cup.
And how does one strap coffee to one's wrist?
Well, there's no way to do it, you know, because Starbucks ain't going to give you that. Mm-hmm. And the third one that actually is practical, if you're in a race, right, if you're filling up a cup and you have to race, racing or running backwards is more conducive to keeping the liquid inside the cup than racing forwards.
So that's a little tip. If you're racing and you fill up a cup of coffee, run backwards.
Well, you know, some of our listeners might get into one of those reality TV shows where they have stupid challenges like that.
Hey, there's nothing stupid about going to Norway and challenging yourself with a race.
You didn't have one of those things where you had to, like, carry an egg on a spoon.
Brian, did you watch any of my TV show?
It's all I watch, Mark. You know that.
What happened on episode 6?
It made my pussy wet.
I'm glad you finally admitted you have a pussy.
Yeah. In episode 6, you said that you were really excited to meet your family and learn about your dad's roots.
Oh, you did watch it.
Learn about your dad. I wouldn't mind learning about your dad's root, if you know what I mean.
My dad had a pretty good root. It looked pretty good, as I remember it.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's also like, as we all think our dads had gargantuan dicks because we saw them as little kids.
That's true.
And so, like, because you don't really see your dads. I guess you might, like, if you take care of him when he's, like, infirmed or whatever as an elderly person, and then it probably looks pathetic.
Yeah, it looks shriveled. The thing that I remember about my dad the most was his ass, because he
That's what you remember the most about your dad.
About those things is because he had, you know, he was in World War II, and he got a piece of shrapnel that entered his body through his calf and traveled up his leg, and then it blew out like the side of his ass. So he had this big giant scar like on his butt cheek, and it kind of like there was like a dent in his butt cheek and a scar. So it was really, you know, it was quite impressive.
Did he ever think that that's why you were gay? Say like this wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for those Jerry bastards?
Well, you know,
kidding me.
Speaking of science, they say like the more children you have, the higher propensity there is to that you'll have a gay child. And by the time you have like your third gay, like your third son, it's almost like a 90% chance that that kid's going to be gay. And I'm the eighth kid. I was born, like, out of eight kids, I'm number eight. So, I mean, I have to be gay.
I'm also, I'm number nine out of...
But it's, like, from your mother, so you're number, like, three.
Four. I'm the third. Yeah. And my father, he had nine children. One died, or one had a miscarriage, so... Mm-hmm. So about 10?
Your dad would have had 10, right?
Yeah.
But it goes by the moms, because it goes womb.
Oh, by the womb.
Yeah, so the chemical bath, you know, the hormonal bath and all that kind of stuff, they say.
So
I guess you could chalk up all, like, miscarriages and stillbirths. Like, I wonder how many of them are gay. And I'm not even joking. Like, well,
they say, though, if you're an old eldest child who's homosexual, chances are your mother had a miscarriage.
Yeah, before you.
Or a significant, you know, like, mm-hmm. there was a baby in her mm-hmm. stomach. Like, if you're literally the first baby in your mother's womb, it's very unlikely that you're actually come out as homosexual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but most, I believe, like, miscarriages are super common, and usually they're just passed off as heavy periods.
Mm-hmm. So and, don't really know.
No, like, most people don't know that they've had a miscarriage. There's so like,
can
a,
we
it's
trust
like
a, anything a scientific study tells us if the scientist at the end is like, well, it's kind of hard to measure a person's penis. We don't really know if you're getting turned on by this porn. We don't really know, you know, it's like...
But that's part of, well, it's part of empirical evidence of stating that nothing, like, it's against the authoritarian view of, like, this is how things are and that's the end. Empirical data is all about, like, constantly refuting it and trying to prove it wrong or testing it to make sure it still holds up. And that's, like, what like, good scientists would do is say, like... is understandably like, this is what our research showed, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you can't, because also like with studies, the people that sign up for studies are more likely to be ready to like try things or do anything. So it's never like, unless they're completely blind, it's never like a perfect study of a
scientific. And even like corporations who do those customer survey forms take that into consideration. The person who is, you know, a satisfied customer is less likely to respond to those forms than somebody who's really raging mad and you know, is like, I hate this company. I'll never shop here again. Blah, 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 you know.
Yeah. And that's like most people that like watch a show or listen to a radio program or something, they don't ever call in or write a letter. Like, that's one in like a million people, but they, for whatever reason, make the most noise when they're complaining about something, and then you find out that there's only like 35 complaints out of a couple hundred million or something.
Oh, I know, right?
It's like, we love hearing from the listeners of the podcast, especially if you are somebody who enjoys what we do, or even if you disagree, just because we disagree doesn't mean we can't be friends.
You're just wrong. That's all that means.
But we value your financial support. If you're a person who loves the shows that we do, all we ask is that you make a generous contribution to Feast of Fun this holiday season, and we'll send you a box of cookies, homemade cookies from our hot oven and into your mouth.
Oh yeah,
a substantial donation.
Well, to cover the cost. Yeah, exactly. Like, here's a dollar, where my box of cookies at? I was like, hey, but
the best way to support the podcast is to become a member at feastoffun.com/plus, because your contribution to the show is how we do the show,
and you can listen to all decades, hundreds of thousands of years of fine antique podcasts, vintage shows with the great Brian Sweeney talking about all kinds of things, including science.
Mm-hmm. Science is
something that's always rewriting itself. The more knowledge that we have, the new models that we have. But one thing a lot of scientists agree on so far in the knowledge that we have is that climate change is real, and that the doom of human civilization is on the horizon.
Yeah, so start casual fucking now.
Oh, I'm way ahead of you, Brian.
So it doesn't matter what diseases you get to listen to what scientists are telling you, and you know, get your kids vaccinated. And the world is round as far as we know it. You know, the interesting thing about these flat earthers is that they all think the moon and Mars and the sun is round, but they think the Earth is flat.
But the moon is also a projection. There's a bunch of different theories. And there's also the moon is hollow, and like Nazis live inside there. The Nazis escape. Yeah, there's a lot of different theories. And that's what makes America great.
Hey, Hey, what kind of movies are you excited or have seen lately? The Madam Marvel trailer just came out
Captain Marvel.
Are you calling it Madam Marvel?
No one.
That's a drag queen.
That's a drag queen.
No one ever called it that. There's a Ms. Marvel.
Ms. Marvel. Shazam. But
this is Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel.
I'm excited for. I don't know. Aquaman.
Are you? Jason Momoa is going to host Saturday Night Live this weekend.
Oh, thank God!
You know,
thank God. The sketch comedy duo of Jason Momoa and I don't know AD Bryant. I don't know. He seems like a nice guy. So good for him.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone who saw Justice League is going to be happy that they made a movie, I guess. I don't know. There's not a lot of things. I saw Widows. That was pretty good.
There's a Spider-Man movie coming soon, Into the Spider-Verse.
Yes, I'm excited to see that.
That's December 14th.
Mary Poppins Returns with Emily Blunt and Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Do you think that's going to be terrible?
I think it'll be fine.
Yeah.
I think, it's going to be exactly what you want it to be, with your mom or whatever on Christmas night. We'll go see the movie, and they'll be like, that was nice. And, that type of thing. It'll be fine.
You're going to fly a kite afterwards, though.
No. I refuse. I will feed the birds before I fly a kite.
Tuppence a bag.
One pence or two pence.
Brian, we're going to see you again before we sign off for the Christmas holidays, right?
There's a new Leprechaun movie coming out.
What? Is Jennifer Aniston in it?
No, but just like the last Halloween, it takes place 25 years. It ignores the Leprechaun sequels.
Oh, really?
Yes, and it's called Leprechaun Returns, but Warwick Davis isn't in it.
It's a reboot of the Leprechaunverse.
Yeah, but there's one returning character, and it's actually the guy who played Francis in Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Oh, he was a spoiled brat.
Yeah, and he was also a bad guy in Teen Wolf, and he played John Wayne Gacy in a movie. So yeah, we're getting Leprechaun. So that's something to look forward to this Christmas.
One of the actors from Pee-wee's Big Adventure on the show.
Maybe.
Judy Tenuta?
Maybe.
Elvira! No, she's already been on the show. E.G. Daly, who played Dottie in Pee-wee's Big Adventure, is coming on the podcast next week. Hopefully.
You should get Lawrence Fishburne.
Oh, yeah. That'd be great.
Why don't you guys put a call into him?
Mm-hmm. I don't think he's in the movie.
Oh, the movie. Why don't you guys get Phil Hartman? He was also on The Simpsons.
He's no longer with us.
Oh that's sad.
What happened?
He died.
Oh, well, I hope it was peaceful.
No,
I hope nothing.
It wasn't.
Oh, well, that's no good.
His wife shot him.
Oh, dear. Not the unfrozen caveman lawyer himself.
Yeah.
Not the anal retentive chef.
The voice of that actor on The Simpsons.
Yeah, Troy McClure.
Troy McClure.
And Seymour, or Lionel Hutz, I mean.
Yeah. It's so sad. Thanks for bringing us down, Brian.
You should get the lady who played Dottie. She also does the voice of Tommy Pickles on Rugrats.
That's who we're getting, E.G. Daly.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Holy shit.
We're in talks with the publicist. We'll see. Now that Fausto announced it, it's probably not going to happen. Because that's the way it is. When you announce a guest, it sends something out into the atmosphere, and somebody's listening to the podcast, and they're going to call E.G. and oh, I heard you're going to be on the Feast of Fun podcast next week. And she's going to be like, fuck them.
Fat.
Yes. Yeah. How dare they say that they wanted to speak to me? How dare you guys?
It is. A part of me, I'm like, I'm fine. Listen, it's okay if she does it. Okay if she doesn't. We have great guests like Brian Sweeney, one of the greatest comedy minds of our generation.
You know who you should get is the guy who played Amazing Larry, the magician. Do you have the show off the rest of us, Amazing Larry?
Do you have his number?
I do. I'll give it to you. It's 588-2300.
That goes to a sex line.
312-588-2300.
You should also get the old hobo that sings Camptown Races over and over and makes Pee Wee jump out of the train car because he's going insane.
Oh my god, I have to apologize speaking about a guest that we could have had that we messed up. So while Mark was in Norway, I was juggling really hard actually to try to keep everything going, but Brian Sweeney and I did this amazing podcast with Bianca Del Rio, and the publicist of another famous drag queen heard it and wanted to come back on the show. Was Shangela.
Oh, wonderful. Oh.
And unfortunately, we didn't catch that message. So
Next time,
but we would love to talk to Shangela. Shangela is one of my favorite guests of all time. She's hilarious. And Brian Sweeney is a hilarious writer, a comedian. You worked on a book recently with some of the good folks of The Onion.
Yes, the co-founder and longest-running editor-in-chief of The Onion, Scott Dickers. Elon Musk, welcome to the future, which is mine. And so get that on Amazon, and the audiobook version is out, and it's read by the wonderful James Adomian, and who we tried to get on the show before also. But the wonderful James Adomian with his wonderful Elon Musk impression. And his Mark Zuckerberg impression. He does a ton of impressions. It's really funny.
What does even Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg sound like? I mean, I guess we have a general idea. I always think of the movie, you know.
Musk. Yeah. Elon Musk has a slight, he's from South Africa. And he talks, I don't know, he's kind of like, he's very racist. He's very racist. He did grow up in a town where it was illegal to be black, and that's true. It's crazy that
being is illegal, Brian. How many times do I have to tell you that?
It was then. That's what I'm saying. It was illegal to live in that town and be black, or like you weren't allowed to. Black people were not allowed in that town.
Oh,
I didn't make the rule. South Africa has a long bad history. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's sad. Anyway, Elon Musk is from there. Charlize Theron is from South Africa. So many people. Do they know It's Christmas? That song was about somewhere in Africa.
And Ain't Gonna Play Sunsette.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Whatever that was is from there.
Yeah, because Sunsetting was a casino mecca in South Africa where artists united against apartheid. Our upcoming Incredibly Strange Christmas Music Special 2018 is coming, where we're playing some of the weirdest, strangest, but catchiest holiday songs that you might have missed. And one of the songs we're playing this year is Do They Know It's Christmas Time in Africa? We're a country that mostly doesn't speak English and doesn't celebrate Christianity.
Well, it's a continent, not a...
I'm sorry, the continent, country. Yeah.
Who are you, Sarah Palin?
sorry.
And, they love the kids, too, or something. That's another Do They Know It's Christmas.
It's Christmas. Yeah.
Free South Africa.
So, folks, if you want us to play your favorite rare, obscure, but catchy holiday classic song, send us an email at mail@feastoffun.com. We thank Brian Sweeney for joining us today.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you. And you should also get the fortune teller from Pee Wee's Big Adventure, the one who says, "The basement of the Alamo."
I'd rather get Jan Hooks, who says,
"You should get Jan Hooks.
The Alamo doesn't have a basement."
Oh, wait, she's dead too.
No.
She's dead. Nora Dunn's alive, but she wasn't in it, but she was the
Nora
same.
Nora Dunn and I are our friends on Facebook, actually, and I've asked her millions of times to come on the show, and she says, "Oh, I'm not feeling well this week." She's kind of just like done with show business and media in general. She posts status updates on Facebook, and that's about it.
As for Dominic Dunn, he could tell you about the OJ trial and stuff. And his daughter from Poltergeist.
He's dead, isn't he dead?
He's alive. His daughter's dead.
Yeah. No, I think Dominic Dunn's. I think the only one that's left is Griffin. From Werewolf in London.
Well, get him on the show.
Hmm?
Get him on the show.
I could.
Get Griffin Dunn on the show. Get Kevin Dunn, Nora's brother.
A lot of gay men masturbated to that scene James Naughton being naked and turning into
the transformation.
Yeah, the transformation.
Really?
Yes. To young gay men, it was a very sexy thing because it was about this hot naked guy becoming this virile, sexy wolf.
It's a very Chuck Tingle-esque. Yeah. I bet that shaped Chuck Tingle's.
Is that right?
Wonderful. I would assume so. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
So you guys can follow Brian Sweeney on Twitter, The Brian Sweeney.
Oh, yes.
But on Facebook, you got to go to Brian's Dong.
Yeah, go right to it.
Deep and hard. You know you can actually change that.
Yeah.
You can?
I guess. I don't know. I'll try.
And give a big shout out and hug to your girlfriend, Mary.
I will.
And to her kids.
And to her dog.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Wonderful dog that you can hear in the background of this episode for eagle-eared listeners.
How's Mary doing?
Mary is doing great, I believe. Should I ask her how she's doing?
Sure.
Hey, Mary. How are you doing?
She said, I'm pretty good waiting for you to get off the phone.
Well, we'll let you go.
The Feast of Fun boys are asking how you are. Oh, now she says, I'm great. How are they?
I'm good, and I'm enjoying the soap. I'm still on the one that has charcoal activated in it.
They like your soaps.
Oh, good. I like my soaps, too.
You keep things clean there.
I do. I was just saying, Brian, why are you talking so dirty? That's gross.
Your husband's or boyfriend is a disgusting pig.
I know.
I don't know how you put up with him.
Does
he give you money or something?
Okay, that was supposed to be just between you and me, Brian. I cannot believe that you told that. Yes, that's our arrangement. Now that it's out, I am open for any other propositions.
Okay,
we're a very pretty woman thing, but
okay. So she's not, so you guys are. Mary just said she's. You guys are swinging now, right?
We do swing, yes.
Okay,
good. Oh,
we
wow.
swing with only with bonobo apes.
Well, there is that club on the south side of Chicago, that swingers house. I'll send you the information.
Mary's never even been to a strip club.
What?
Actually, neither have I. But,
oh, my God. I have.
A female strip. We've been to it once with Peaches Christ.
Yeah, we should all go.
Came up to us and said, would you like a lamp dance? And I was like, you smell weird.
We should one night take a whole bunch of shrooms and go to a strip club and record it for a special episode. For only subscribers.
Okay, we'll do it.
I'll do it.
Do some poppers. Let's go crazy.
Jalapeno poppers?
Yeah, what? That shrooms and jalapeno poppers.
All right,
I'm more like want to do those mukbang videos where we just order a bunch of fried food at a diner and people watch us eating it.
And we do bongs?
No, fried mukbang. Food. Mukbang is the Korean word for just watching people eat.
Oh, yeah, those Koreans, they have small dicks, apparently. That's what Fausto said.
South Koreans.
South Koreans. According to that study, it's not
we don't know the North
new knowledge, new information might change that. So,
if you're a South Korean,
show us your big dicks.
If you're Korean, just send me a dick pic. I want to see.
Yeah.
Brian, come into the studio and drop your pants.
Give Mary a big hug for us, and we shall see you soon.
Thank you. See you too very, very soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Happy holidays, bye. Brian.
Happy holidays.
Bye. Brian Sweeney will be joining us in one of our last episodes of the year where we have some of our favorite guests on the show. all in the same room. It'll be a pandemonium.
It's fun to talk to Brian remotely. He lives on the south side of Chicago, so it takes him like an hour to get here sometimes. So we're just why don't you come talk to us? And he's just like, yeah, let's do it over the phone. We're like, all right, let's do it over the phone.
I don't want to fight.
It's kind of nice because now he's gone.
Yeah.
We don't have to wait for him. He like usually he just hangs out on our couch. He gives himself some insulin. He eats some like licorice or some Skittles and
stuff. He brings candy and doesn't share it with us.
No, because it's his diabetes. It's medicine to him.
And I'm like, I want to have some of your medicine.
And he leaves funny behind daddy. Little tiny bottles of water in our refrigerator.
And why does he do that?
I don't know.
Brian, are you still on the phone there? No, you.
No, he
hasn't. I'm here.
Yeah, he's there.
Oh, shit. You can't do that to me, Fausto.
Why do you leave those bottles of water in the fridge?
Because I forget them. I bring Aquafina bottles to drink, and sometimes I forget them.
I want to remind folks, we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus.
We want to thank you guys so much for listening. Thanks for being on the show, Brian.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye. Say goodbye.
Bye. Bye. Get the dog to bark.
Archer, bark.
Just kick Archer. Him real hard. Make him bark.
Oh, wait. I can, actually. Hold on.
Archer.
There we go.
Yeah. Yes, a Christmas miracle.
Merry Christmas, every one of us.
Wow.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.